email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we got this in about the foam thing. Hi, Ray. My heart is utterly broken when I see very young children, as young as 9 months old, having their faces stuck in phones and screens. The fault lies completely with the parents. Fact, says that person. I'm just amazed when I go out to restaurants and stay in hotels where children eat and watch screens at the same time. Horrendous. What happened to sitting at the table to eat and chat together? Why do parents give children these screens to babies and children who are as young as 3 and 4 years old, who actually own their own iPads with a fancy carry case? It baffles me. I have 2 children, aged 7 and 9, and neither have this access. Since they were young, they bring their bag of stuff and this entertains them no end and are happy out because they know this is the rule. I'm convinced that if screen time is limited, children will be so much more at peace and there wouldn't be half the issues I see daily in terms of irritability, emotion deregulation, inattention and a complete lack of social skills. Reading scores and creativity will be enhanced. The power of play cannot be underrated and children need to participate in all forms of play for which is essential to their development. This I know after my last 27 years working in primary education. Parents need to just say no. My mother used to say, no is no. End of story. Yeah, well, Jonathan Haidt would agree with you. I see he was on Brendan O'Connor recently. The Anxious Generation is the name of his book, and he talks about the great rewiring. And he reckons he has established a direct causal relationship between the arrival of smartphones and the amount of anxiety, depression, etc. that exists in the world today among our young people. So that's that. Now, Connor Pope. Hello, Connor.
How are you, Ray? How are you getting on?
Not too bad. You are filming today, so you couldn't be with us.
That's right. I'm filming the new series of the Complaints Bureau for RTE. So it'll be on your screens by, I'd say, the end of March. So we're just filming some key elements of it today.
Great. Well, thanks for taking time out to talk to us. Pricewatch@rte.ie. Pricewatch@rte.ie. So this came in. Dear Connor, I had my hair done in November and it was fried. I think we have their attention now. I lost half my hair and was left with hair that is in very poor condition. They left products on my hair for negligent amount of time. The hair also looked nothing like what I asked for. I returned the next day to talk to the manager. The owner dealt with me and didn't talk me through my options, just tried to fix the colour. But it's not fixed at all. It's still not salon standard and looks awful. And my main complaint all along was about the damage done to my hair, which hasn't been fixed at all. I sent them a massive document outlining all the issues I had and pictures and videos too, and they refused to refund me as I received a complimentary dye job on the second day. Oh, this is serious, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I'd say they're probably the two most ill-equipped people to talk about hair in Ireland are probably talking about it right now. But leaving that aside, this is like, this, I can see how this might be extremely distressing for somebody because, you know, the people go to hairdressers and they expect a certain standard and they go in there with a certain vision in their head of how they're going to look when they come out. And if it all goes pear-shaped, well, you can see how distressing that is. And clearly it is distressing for this listener. So I'm not downplaying it whatsoever. Now, I suppose the good news, and I use the word good fairly loosely here, is that they do have protections under the law. Because under the Sale of Goods and Services Act, if you pay for a service, you can expect it to be carried out with the proper care and attention, and you can expect that the business carrying out that service has the appropriate skills to do the job. Now, you can also expect that the materials they use, whatever those materials are fit for purpose, and anything that they give you should be of an acceptable quality. So that's the law, right? So on that reading, this person does have rights. And if you go to a hairdresser's, for instance, and you don't get what you paid for, then you can ask the business to do two things, okay? And I think it gets a little bit muddier here, Ray, because you can ask the business to either correct the problem, if they can, or to give you a full refund of the amount paid. So I suppose what this listener is saying is that there was two distinct problems. The hairstyle or the colour wasn't as she wanted it to be, and there was the damage to the hair. The hairdressers would say, well, we had two options here. We could correct the problem or we could give her a refund. We corrected the problem. As a result, they're digging their heels in and saying, well, we can't give you a refund because we've corrected the problem. Now, there's a couple of things that I'd caution against here, because it's very easy and understandable that somebody uses language like "my hair was fried."
Mm.
But that in itself might be problematic to getting a resolution to the issue, because it's, if you're the business, you might listen to that and think, well, that's extremely inflammatory language, if for want of a better word, to be using. You know, the hair might be slightly damaged, but it's not destroyed, or half my hair isn't gone, like only a little bit of your hair is damaged, or whatever it might be. So you know that whole phrase about, you know, catch more flies with honey than vinegar?
Mm.
I sometimes think that in scenarios like this, it's probably better to take a softly, softly approach and say, listen, there's a problem. What can we do to resolve the problem? Because ultimately, what this listener needs is the goodwill of the business. Because without the goodwill, she's going to really struggle to get redress. Now, she has struggled, and this was last November. So what I would suggest is done next, as a next step, is that a formal complaint in writing should be sent to the hairdressers, outlining in a fairly brief way what the issues are and how she would like to see the matter resolved. Because I think sometimes, I think she mentioned a huge volume of documents that she sent in.
I sent them a massive document outlining all the issues.
I think that in itself can be problematic. Because a lot of the time people will see like multiple images and huge, like she's not preparing something for a court case at this stage. She needs to write a fairly cursory letter, 4 or 5 paragraphs outlining what happened, what she believes is the problem, and what she would like to have happen next. And if that gets ignored, well, then I can almost hear you sigh at this point, because you've sighed at this suggestion in the past, Ray, and I understand it.
Small claims court.
The only other option is the small claims court. Mm. And if she can present her case to the small claims court, she might get the redress that she's looking for. And it looks like she does have images. It looks like she does have documentary evidence that something went wrong with her hair. Now, the hairdressers would be perfectly entitled to make their case before a judge, and then ultimately it would be up to the judge to make a call on it. But that's really where it stands. There's not a whole lot more that can be done.
It's interesting, though, because when you walk inside a hairdresser's or a barber's, like, it's a different relationship than going into a shop and buying a jumper.
100%. Because
yes,
it's far more intimate, and you spend an awful lot more time interacting with the hairdresser.
Yeah, but they're also changing your appearance. They're cutting things off your head. No, I'm just the reason I say that is because, you know, when you have surgery, I know it's a huge leap. But when you have surgery, you sign a waiver, don't you, to say, you know, if anything happens, blah, blah, blah.
You have to say that you have been fully explained
yes,
the risks and
exactly.
all that stuff. Yeah.
But when you go into a hairdresser's, you aren't filled in on the full list of risks, are you?
No, and nor are you given the full outline of your rights. And I think if you were, it might change the relationship that you would have with your hairdresser.
Yeah.
For instance, my wife has the same hairdresser, and she's been using him for a long time, and they have a great relationship, and he's really good. Like, I can't imagine a scenario where he'd be saying, here are your rights and
yes,
here's the risks. So for most people, that just wouldn't, it would never ever enter into the picture.
But legally, though, what is the relationship? You know, when you sit down and go, will you cut my hair? Are you surrendering your rights, or?
You have the right to expect the skills required to do the job.
That's vague enough, though, isn't it?
It is, but if they don't have the skills to do the job, you have the right to redress. So let's say if you were going in to get your hair done, and the junior apprentice who's been sweeping the floor for a week was given a very complex hairdo to do, and they messed it up. Well, then, you know, clearly that person doesn't have the appropriate skills.
Yeah.
Through no fault
but
of their own.
But you have to prove that.
But you do have to prove it. And ultimately, that's why I mentioned the dreaded small claims court, because ultimately, if she wants to pursue it, it comes down to that.
It seems like it's all stacked in the hairdresser's favour, this.
Well, I mean, the hairdressers might argue that, well, you know, they've done the job as that they were paid to do. And if the customer, and I'm not impugning the customer here by any means, but they might say, well, if the customer's not happy with it, well, maybe, you know, we've gone another way towards making her happy. We've recolored it or whatever it might be. And that's why I think it comes back to what I said earlier. The language that you use when you're making a complaint
is important.
And it's not just this specific one. It really does matter.
Will you keep us keep us abreast of that one and see how it pans out. Now, number two, dear Conor, like thousands of others, we were impacted by the Aer Lingus pilot strike in June 2024. We were flying to Tanzania on honeymoon on June 29th. The first leg of our three-leg flight was an Aer Lingus flight to Heathrow. This flight was cancelled 4 days before we were due to fly. The only alternative that worked for us was an EasyJet flight from Belfast to Gatwick. We started the process of looking for a refund when we returned in August. We have received no compensation or correspondence from Aer Lingus since then. We've called them many times. Each time we call, we've been reassured that our cases being prioritised but are not given any information in terms of our place in the queue, etc. It's incredibly frustrating at this stage. We feel like we're going around in circles.
We shouldn't be dealing with this story, Ray, at this point. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's
okay, and it's really important to say that at the outset. This is not the kind of query that needs to come to our attention. This is the kind of story that should have been dealt with by Aer Lingus months ago. Now, don't get me wrong. I have huge sympathy for the airline. They went through a fairly difficult time during the summer. All your listeners will remember there was the pilot strike. Without wanting to get into the rights and wrongs of the pilot strike, it was hugely difficult for the management of the airline. It was hugely difficult for the staff in the airline. And it was incredibly difficult for the impacted passengers. But the problems that came up were not the fault of the passengers. Mm. And Aer Lingus had a right, had a legal obligation to fix them. So the fact that this couple were due to fly on this dream holiday and it was severely disrupted because of the strike, not Aer Lingus's fault, not the management's fault, not the pilot's fault, it's just one of those things that happened. But after the fact, the airline had an obligation to fix it and to fix it promptly. So it should have been sorted out months ago. It's absurd that this couple were writing to me in December and then again in January to try and get this issue resolved. It just doesn't make any sense to me. So I contacted the airline, and as Aer Lingus often does, they had the problem addressed and fixed very quickly. So this is the essence of the statement. It's not long. Aer Lingus regrets the delay in resolving this claim and sincerely apologises to our valued customer. While there were an unusually high number of claims as a result of the operational disruption last summer, the customer's claim should have been resolved in a more timely manner. We are liaising with the customer directly to arrange transfer of funds for the refund and compensation due in this case. And that's it. She's contacted me then subsequently to say that she has got the money and everything is fine, but ultimately it shouldn't have come to this.
Yeah, so does it get misplaced or what happens? And you can't really second guess
I can't. I don't know. But is the unhelpful answer. But I despair when I hear of basic things going wrong with big companies.
And does that suggest, Conor, that there are other people who still haven't got compensation for things that happened as a result of the strike?
Yeah. I have no doubt there are other people who are still waiting for compensation, but they haven't contacted the Ray Darcy show, so they haven't got redress. And it shouldn't come to that. It shouldn't be about contacting a radio station or a newspaper or whatever it might be. These problems should be fixed without difficulty, and it's ridiculous that they're not.
You fixed it. I think we're going to leave people with a smile on their face. And I know we've played clips and clips, but we're going to do this again before we go. Conor, thanks very much.
Thanks
very much.
See
you. Bye. That's our Eurovision entry this year, Emmy and Like a Party. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on Drive Time. We do a bit of dum-dum. Enjoy your Monday evening.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.